Good evening, everyone. I'd like to welcome you all to the July 10th reorganizational meeting of the Board of Education, and I would ask our superintendent to please lead us in the Pledge of Allegiance.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
We have a number of changes in the meeting agenda, which is item 3. We have replacement pages, item DDDD1, instructional personnel, schedules A6 and A15, and item DDDD2, non-instructional personnel, cover page, schedules B6, B7, and B17A. Okay, turning to administration of oath 4. The administration of oath to the office to the newly elected board members. Our district clerk will be handling that, and that will be to Jonathan Kornreich and Vinny Vizzo. Okay. Now we have B, nomination and election of president of the Board of Education. May I have any nominations, please? Mrs. Gish?
I nominate Mr. Connors.
Is there a second to that? Mr. Vizzo? All in favor? Opposed? I abstain. Thank you very much. So. Okay. We have nomination for the office of Vice President of the Board, and I would like to nominate Irene Gish. Is there a second to that? Inger? Okay. All in favor? Opposed? Abstention?
I will abstain.
Congratulations to you. We next have nominations for the district clerk pro tem for the 2019-20. Inger, is there a second? Mrs. Gish, all in favor? Opposed? You got to be opposed to yourself. Abstain. Congratulations. Okay, next we're turning to the appointment of offices, item 5E, the appointment of district clerk for 2019-20. And we are voting this evening to appoint Kathleen Samponia as the district clerk. And is it the motion from Inger? And second, Mrs. Gish. All in favor? Opposed? Abstention? Congratulations, Kathy. Now it's my turn. Okay, what I would like to do is as much of a consent agenda. There's a lot on tonight's meeting that really should be consent agenda. I'd like to combine items F through I, district treasurer, deputy district treasurer, district claims order, and DASA coordinator. May I have a motion on that?
So
Mrs. Gish, second Mrs. Germano. All in favor? Opposed? Abstention? Motion passes. Okay, turning to 6 other appointments, we're talking about, I'd like to do the same thing here, items J through Y. J through Y. May I have a motion on that, please? So Mr. Cornwright, second. Mrs. Gish, all in favor? Opposed? Abstention? Motion passes. This evening, turning to item 7, report to the Board of Education, there's been a lot of discussion, a lot of controversy regarding the new immunization law. We have this evening Chris Mistecki from the law offices of Guercio and Guercio, which is our attorney, to discuss the immunization law this evening. Chris?
I know this has been a very important topic that's been going on in the news. It's been affecting school districts across Long Island and the state of New York. And I appreciate the opportunity to present to the board and to the public tonight. For the members of the public that don't know who I am, my name is Christopher Mistecki. I'm a partner at Guercio & Guercio. We're an education law firm. We represent approximately 60 school districts throughout the state. And the topic tonight is an overview generally as to the immunization requirements in the state of New York. I'm going to go through a recent amendment to the law that carved out religious exemptions that were put in place, and then I'll actually provide the board with a update that we just got in my office within the last, really today, of some ongoing litigation in this area that may impact everything that I'm saying to the board tonight. So this is the status of the law as we sit here today, there's a matter that's being filed in Albany Supreme Court with a request for a TRO, where I'm hearing that the judge may issue a decision on Friday, at least with regard to the temporary matter of this. So generally, so everybody understands where we're coming from, New York has immunization requirements. It's anybody entering a public, private, or parochial school. And this definition also includes daycare centers between the ages of 2 months to 18 years of age must be immunized. That's the general overview of the statute. There's a specific list of vaccinations that are required, and students are required to meet that list of vaccinations in order to attend a school district. There are time limits that are set forth in the statute for a student to attend school. A school may permit a student to attend for up to 14 days without submitting proof of immunizations. That's the general grace period that exists in the statute. And there's also a 30-day grace period in the statute for a student who transfers from outside of New York State or outside of the country. So there's an additional grace period that exists in the statute, and absent some exemptions, there's a requirement to exclude students if they don't meet those requirements in the statute. There is what's been known as the first exemption, which is students who are in process. So even during the grace periods that exist in the statute, if the student has received the first dose in each immunization series, and has age-appropriate appointments for follow-up vaccinations, then they are permitted to extend their stay in school and not be excluded. There's also an in-process requirement if a student is obtaining a blood test to determine if they are immune from certain diseases. And then even after a student has received results from that blood test that they are negative for that immunity, then if they have the age-appropriate appointments for follow-up vaccinations within the 30 days, there are extension requirements that are in the statute. So that's the in-process provision of the statute. Students and parents are required to submit proof of immunizations to the school, and the regulations provide a whole host of documents that would satisfy that requirement as to the proof of immunizations. Generally, the most common is a signed document from a physician that list the specific immunizations, the dates that they received them, and that's the general process that could be submitted to school districts. There are a whole host of other documents that the regulations state are appropriate forms of acceptable proof of immunization, and they're listed there. Now, the exemptions to the immunization requirements are, the first is if you demonstrate an immunity to certain types of diseases, and they are limited items, measles, mumps, rubella, those items that are listed there. And that requires proof of blood test in order to demonstrate an exemption. And again, that has to be submitted in sufficient proof for a school district to recognize that exemption. There is also a medical exemption under the law where if a student, if a physician certifies that the health of the student would be adversely affected by immunization, there's a certification requirement that happens. If a physician signs off on that, then that is sufficient to grant a medical exemption under the law. And that's generally where we are in the law today. Those are the known requirements, and those are the exemptions that exist under the law today. So why we're here, why I'm explaining this to the board, because this has been the law for a long period of time. Why we're here today is because on June 13th, 2019, the governor issued a statute which repealed the religious exemption under the law. So prior to that, there was a provision of the law that allowed students to be exempted from vaccination requirements if their parents or guardians held genuine and sincere religious beliefs contrary to the immunization requirements. That has been repealed from the law, and the stated basis for that repeal was outbreaks that have come into play that caused state legislature to take a change on that stance. You know, that's the legislature's decision. That's not a local school board decision. That's a law that was passed to repeal this religious exemption. And since that time, the State Education Department has issued a whole host of guidance documents to school districts, and the first stated that if you have students that are currently enrolled in the school, they must receive the first age-appropriate dose of the immunization by June 28, 2019, and by July 14, 2019, they have to submit sufficient proof that they have the scheduled follow-up appointments in accordance with the regulations. If a student has not attended school yet and they're attending school in September, the guidance documents provides that they have to provide proof within 14 days of the first day of school, and then again within the 30 days if they have the age-appropriate appointments after they receive the first dosage of the vaccination. So here are some questions that have come out. Does the new legislature impact the medical exemption? And the answer to that question is no, it does not. The statute still provides for a medical exemption to the requirements. Do the requirements apply to school to children attending summer schools? And that answer is clear in the statute that the answer is yes. The vaccination applies to those students as well. Now, the question is, what if a student is not immunized and an exception does not apply? What are the obligations of this school district according to the guidance that's issued by the New York State Education Department? And the obligation on the school district if a student is not immunized is the child must be immunized in order to attend public school. The immunizations can be performed by any health practitioner, and if the parent consents, the immunization may be administered free of charge by the county health department. That's something that can happen if a student is not immunized. And what happens after excluding a child? There's an obligation on the school district, if a student is excluded, to notify the local county health department when a student is excluded. There's a requirement to send the parents of the student an immunization consent form, and a report that explains the parent's responsibilities to have their child immunized. And if the parent consents, the school, in coordination with the county health department, should provide a time and place where the child can be immunized. If a child has been excluded for more than 2 weeks, guidance from the state education department indicates that there would be a requirement for the school district to contact CPS to advise that a student is not attending school and has not been immunized. There are penalties for the school district that are specifically listed in the statute for permitting a student to continue to be enrolled in a school district or not be excluded from a school district, rather, after the specific grace periods that we discussed. There are specific fines up to $2,000 per violation. So that's per student that would remain in the school. So the question has been posed to the school district, what are the options for parents if they do not want their children to be immunized? There are the options still of a medical exemption under the law, and there's an option for homeschooling a student. Because you remember, the statute doesn't just apply to public schools, it applies to private and parochial schools as well. In terms of the services that are mandated by a student's IEP and 504 plan, State Education Department, again, in their guidance, makes clear that this new law does apply to students who receive special education services. And SED has taken the position that this legislation does not affect a valid medical exemption, and therefore the statute does not discriminate against students with disabilities, because if they have a disability that requires an exemption, the medical exemption would cover that that statute. Again, that's the stated reason that's articulated by the State Education Department. And accordingly, special education students must comply with the vaccination requirements unless they have a valid medical exemption. In terms of home tutoring, meaning the student remains enrolled in the school but would be receive education services at home, the State Education Department has indicated that that's not permissible. If a student is being tutored in the home, it's because of some other reason, medical, psychological, or physical, that the child cannot attend school. And to be eligible for home tutoring, the child needs to be actually enrolled in the school and therefore would have to comply with the vaccination requirements. Again, the statute is clear with regard to if you need to be vaccinated to receive services from a public, private, or parochial school. And the statute and the guidance documents state that if a student is enrolled in the school, regardless of where they receive educational services, they will need to comply with the vaccination requirements. Homeschooled students, again, I did indicate before that that is an option for families to be homeschooled. And Public Health Law 2164, which requires proof of immunization, does not apply to the vaccination requirements. So if you homeschool your children, you're not required to submit proof of vaccination to the school district as part of that process. However, the commissioner has indicated that if there's an outbreak of a disease and a student is on home instruction and they seek to participate in testing or other activities, then they can be excluded from school in the case of an outbreak for a disease. In terms of the question of are schools required to provide special education services to homeschool children who have not received required vaccinations, Education Law 3602C, which is the state statute that requires school districts to provide services for a student that's on home instruction, that statute specifically states that those students are deemed to be enrolled in a private school for the purposes of receiving services. And accordingly, the SED guidance that's been issued to date provides that those students cannot be provided with special education services since they are enrolled without meeting the vaccination requirements. The only caveat to that is that SED has indicated that this is a question that they will be addressing specifically in updated guidance, and they have not indicated the answer that they're going to provide for this. So right now, the status of the guidance to schools is you cannot provide the services. I know the question has been asked with regard to advocacy by the Board of Education, and in this instance, I know I've said it to the board before, but the board is a creature of statute and only has those abilities that are specifically listed in the statute, and lobbying is not listed as one of those specific activities. So the Internal Revenue Code has specifically prohibited school districts from lobbying legislation as a substantial part of activities. And I know the term is substantial, but there are plenty of cases that make it clear that lobbying is not a permissible use of your resources and funds. So that is the current status of the law as we know it today. As I intimated before, I received an update probably an hour ago that there was papers that were filed in Albany Supreme Court. There's apparently a class action lawsuit that's been filed by a specific group challenging the statute as a whole. The action does not name school districts because this is a legislative issue, and the state of New York is named as the party in that action, and the claim is that the statute as a whole violates the freedom of religion and a whole host of other claims. So I'm hearing that the judge is hearing that matter. Responses from New York State are to be provided by tomorrow, and the judge intimated that a decision may be reached by Friday. Now, I've heard that before in cases, and then the judge delays, so I don't want you thinking that there will be a decision by Friday, but depending on what that judge does in this case may significantly impact the obligations of the school district going forward. So if there's any questions from the board?
Colleagues?
So just to clarify, so does the school district have any discretionary ability or any ability to make for us as a body to make exceptions or to bend these rules in any way?
The answer is no. You have to follow the statutes of the state of New York and the guidance of the state education department that are issued. They are the governing body that oversees school districts as a whole. So the guidance is what schools are mandated to follow. And again, there are civil penalties that are clear from the statute that could be imposed upon schools.
Anybody else? Chris, you'll be staying for a while, so in public participation, if anybody has any questions, you'd be able to
Absolutely.
Have any responses. Good. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Turning to item 8, items for board discussion. Anything that needs to be discussed at this particular point? Okay. 9, information items for the board policy. Turn this over to Mrs. Gish, who chairs the policy committee.
Okay. There are 4 policies that we discussed at the policy committee meeting. The first one, 4730, is homework. You received a copy in your What? It's got no... That's right. Where is it? Ah, thank you. My savior. Okay. There's only a few changes from the original homework policy. Homework cannot be used for disciplinary purposes. It's supposed to be grade appropriate and graded and worked out with the teacher planning. homework assignments must be meaningful and purposeful, and that's about it. Oh, and the religious holidays. In the original policy, it said consideration should be given to students who may not have adequate time for homework preparation due to religious observance during high holy days. We removed that paragraph because the policy says that homework assignments should not be given over holiday period. And the wording of that paragraph saying consideration should be given, well, there is no consideration to be given. Homework should not be given. So we didn't want to keep that paragraph in because we felt that it would be misinterpreted by people who think it's okay to give homework over a religious holiday, and it's not. So I think that takes care of that one. Then we have the code of conduct. Now, the code of conduct is something like 40 pages worth of information, and we go through it every year. A lot of it is statute. A lot of it is stuff that we just go through and change slight wording. One of the things that we added into this year is, where are we? Portion F, number 11, that behaviors of racial, religious, or ethnic comments and behaviors are to be considered harassment in our policy. So that was added. And I think that was just about. And we did put in some what the penalties would be for racial, religious, ethnic comments and behaviors. And that's spelled out in the code of conduct now. Now, the code of conduct, just because something is not specifically written in the code of conduct, does not mean that a student would not be disciplined because of it. So before this policy was approved, we still would have disciplined a student who harassed another student based on religious or ethnic or any kind of that kind of behavior, certainly would have been. This just spells it out a little more clearly so that everyone kind of knows. I think then we talked a bit about the section on searches, and we specifically added backpacks. Searching backpacks is permissible under this policy. And lockers, anything can be searched. And there was a whole section on procedures using metal detectors. While we don't have metal detectors where the kids walk through, there are wands that can be used, and that is all enumerated in this code of conduct. So I think that was it on that. Then we have student health services, which really reiterates exactly what was just mentioned from Mr. Mastecchi. And there's a small section about homeless students, to enable homeless students to be covered by our health policy. And then the last policy we discussed was drug and alcohol abuse. And the main change there was that we will designate an employee, and I think that's in the packet, wasn't it?
In the board,
will later on in the evening be designated an employee to provide materials and resources to parents, staff members, or students regarding how to find services for drug and alcohol abuse. Yes.
What was the phone thing in there?
Yes.
Yes, that's in the code of conduct. Let me go back. It is in here. Did you read it?
Do you want to talk about the changes?
Yes. Find it first. What section was that? What was it? Yes, cell phones use. Okay. Yeah. We talked about this a lot. I don't know how I missed it. Unauthorized cell phone use. The bottom line is that students can use their cell phones in school under the direction of a teacher or staff member. If the teacher tells the students to put it away, they're expected to put the cell phone away. If the student is caught using a cell phone or wearing earbuds after they've been told not to use them in the classroom, it is a 2-day suspension, and it's different penalties depending upon how many.
I don't have it in front of me, but is that a shall or a may or a will or what is that?
Well, it doesn't say no exceptions.
It doesn't say no exceptions. That we took out.
Okay.
It doesn't say no exceptions. What it does is it gives the teacher an opportunity to address the student appropriately, ask the student to put take off the earbuds or to put the phone away. And at that point, they can make a referral. They would make a referral to administration. Administration could give a 2-day in-school suspension to the student regarding that. If the pattern of behavior continues, then the second offense would be where the principal would have an opportunity for a 3-day out-of-school suspension for that student, but it wouldn't have to be necessarily that. It gives the principal some latitude to make a decision. One of the things that we've also said that if a student is using a cell phone and captures information that is very helpful to administration and to the teacher on that cell phone, then that would not be a punitive action necessarily. Obviously, in emergency situations, students need to be able to use their cell phones because we do believe cell phones have the ability to save lives. So, but we really don't want students using cell phones in the classroom to harass other students or harass a teacher or to be using it and then posting information. Let's say a fight takes place in a school. We're not really looking for students to do that because that is very hurtful and it ends up being detrimental to students, on social media. So
this whole question of technology in the schools has been an evolving thing as the years have passed. So I'm not on the policy committee. I wasn't there for this discussion. So if you covered it, forgive me. But so are you finding that that cell phone use in the schools is continuing and is it getting worse? Is it more disruptive? Are you finding that?
Well, I'm going to say that most students are very compliant in the classroom, and because all of our students next year will have Chromebooks in grades 7 through 12, this is really not an issue for us at the elementary level, but at the high school and junior high school levels, in the past, cell phone use has been problematic. There was a point where the district had an initiative, which was bring your own device, and teachers would ask students to take out their cell phones. But when a teacher is instructing a student and there's no reason for the student to have their cell phone out, and the teacher asks students, and I think our teachers have been very good about asking students to put their cell phones away, it can be very disruptive in a classroom. Plus, you know, students are very sophisticated, and I'm not going to say all of them do this, but students also use cell phones and earbuds to cheat on examinations, and that is not what the culture that we are looking to promote.
Okay. Were there any questions? Any other questions on the policies?
These four policies were listed for discussion. We would like to approve them this evening. Is there any reason not to? Can I have a motion to approve them as presented? Inger? Mrs. Second. Gish? Any further discussion? All in favor? Opposed? Abstention? The policies are approved. Okay, turning to 10 designations and authorizations, BB, statement of assurances and disclosure of interest by Board of Education members. May I have a motion on that, please?
So moved.
Mrs. Gish, second. Mr. Bizzo, all in favor? Opposed? Abstention? Motion passes. And turning to double C, designation of board liaison and standing subcommittee positions. What we have for next year, board liaison at Arrowhead will be Dr. Kerman, Minasaki, Ms. Blubinka, Mount Elementary, Ms. Germano, Nassikeg, Mr. Kornreich, Setauket will be myself, Jalinas will be Mr. Vizzo, Murphy will be Mrs. Gish, and Ward Melville will be Ms. Germano, and so forth. Insofar as the standing committees, the audit committee will be Mr. Kornreich, Dr. Kerman, and myself. Facilities will be Mr. Vizzo, Dr. Kerman, and myself. Policy will be Mrs. Gish, Ms. Germano, Ms. Babinka. Okay. Can we approve that? Make a motion? Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. So we made the motion. We made the motion, right? Okay, and we approved everything. Okay, we did it. We didn't. We did. Okay, you make the motion, and Ms. Germano, okay, second. All in favor? Opposed? Abstention? These are approved as presented. Okay, what I'd like to do now is double D through double Q. We would vote on these together. As a consent agenda and so forth. Double C through double Q. We have a motion on that, please?
Double D.
Excuse me?
Double D.
Double D. Double D through double Q, yes. Mrs. Gish, second. Mr. Bizzo, all in favor? Opposed? Abstention? Motion passes. Turning to item 11. Minutes, RR, minutes of June 19th, 2019. May I have a motion on those minutes, please? Ms. Germano, second. Mrs. Gish, all in favor? Opposed? Abstention? Those minutes are approved. Now, turning to item 12, items for board action. I would like to also combine these. We have a lot of very routine things here. We are going to suggest that we do SS through CCCC as presented, with the exception of triple N. That will be the revised contract, revised proposal that we just received. So if we combine those together, may have a motion on that, please. Mr. Bizzo, second. Mrs. Gish, all in favor? Opposed? Abstention? They are approved. I'd ask Mr. Carlson if he could go over Item XX, the acceptance of donations.
Yes, we have several donations I would like to make mention of. First is a check for $100 donated by Ms. Janet Von Bargen to the Jody F. Scholarship Fund. We have a check for $75 donated by Dazzle Bar to the Warden Mobile High School Scholarship Fund. We have a check for $500 from the Suffolk County Chapter of the New York State Association of School Business Officials to be deposited into the scholarship fund. A check for $260 from the Setauka PTA as an additional donation for the work to be done in one of the courtyards at Setauka Elementary School. You may recall at last month's meeting there was another donation from the PTA for that as well. A donation of a flag football kit from Fuel Up to Play 60 for use at the Warden Mobile High School physical education program. A check for $100 donated by Joshua and Ellen Miller to the Minnesota Elementary School Allied Fund. A check for $200 donated by Ms. Deborah Cohen to the Minnesota Music Program for supplies and music books. And a check for $1,000 from the Blue Ocean Student Entrepreneurs Corporation in recognition of our Warden Mobile students' participation in the Blue Ocean competition, and they plan on using that money to purchase a color laser printer.
Okay, thank you very much. I'd like to turn now to personnel matters instructional. May I have a motion on that, please? Personnel matters instructional. Mr. Vizzo, second. Mr. Mano, all in favor? Opposed? Abstention? Motion passes.
Yes, sir. This is the fun part of the program for me, as we get to recognize and announce some of our new hires, some folks that are new to Three Village, and some folks that have moved up in the ranks. So first, I am thrilled to announce, as our new Executive Director of Health, Physical Education, Recreation, Athletics, Kevin Finnerty. Kevin, congratulations. Next, I would like to recognize and congratulate Andrea Mormon, who will be our new Assistant Principal at Warden Mobile High School. In addition, I would like to also recognize Laura McNamara, as she is back as our math teacher and chairperson at Warden Mobile. Congratulations. Next, I'd like to welcome new to Three Village, Mr. Stephen Phillips. He is here as our new technology teacher. Mr. Phillips, thank you. And last but certainly not least, I'd like to welcome another new member of our special education staff, Deborah Zuccaro. Congratulations. And Mr. Connors, did you approve triple N as it's revised?
We did, as revised.
Excellent.
As revised.
Excellent. So if that was the case, I would like to recognize and congratulate our new Deputy Superintendent, Jeff Carlson. Congratulations.
Congratulations, Jeff. Much deserved. Turning to personnel matters non-instructional. May I have a motion on that, please? Mrs. Gish, second. Ms. Germano? Any discussion? All in favor? Opposed? Abstention? Motion passes. And so forth. Anything on that? Very routine. Turning to EEEE, the recommendations of the Committee on Special Education Subcommittee and Accommodations 504, meetings for the dates stated. We have a motion on this, please. Mrs. Gish, second. Mr. Vizzo, all in favor? Opposed? Abstention? Motion passes. And lastly, FFFF, the recommendations of the Committee on Preschool Special Education. Mrs. Gish, second. Mr. Vizzo, all in favor? Opposed? Abstention? Motion passes. Turning to item 13, informational items of interest. Are there any items that we'd like to bring to our colleagues' attention? Seeing none, I'd like to turn now to our public participation session. Public participation can be up to 30 minutes in length, and we ask each individual to limit his or her comments to 3 minutes. Dana Whaley, if I'm pronouncing that. make sure it's on.
You can take it off if it's easier.
There we go. Is it working?
Yes.
Okay. So thank you for the opportunity to speak. This has never been my forte. I've never been to a Board of Ed meeting. But unfortunately, we're in a situation, a lot of us within the district find ourselves in a situation where we need to come to the board, which is really unfortunate because I feel an issue of this nature should have really been handled in a situation that was a little more sensitively taken, where we wouldn't have to come into public and out our families and out our medical information. So I'm a little bit taken back, but that's the way that this was taken care of. But we're here, and so I would like to kind of just see what we can kind of come to in terms of the issue about the repeal for religious exemption reasons. As the lawyer for the district was saying, there is possibility of a stay happening on Friday, so we'll find out more about that. But from what I've been told in talking to some members of legal teams in terms of homeschooling, that there may be a challenge in terms of the 3602C piece, in terms of that's not really students being enrolled when they're in homeschool instruction. So I guess we'll see how things work out Friday and if there'll be some additional information to discuss in terms of legalities. But I feel the issue of education is very important to me. I come from special education background, so this issue is pretty dear and near to my heart. And I find it very disgusting that the state threw our children under the bus and had nothing to say in terms of what would happen with special needs children. These are children that are behind the eight ball to begin with, and to put them into a situation where families are told, we have nothing for you. We have nothing to discuss with you. We will not meet with you. You have to come to a public forum to discuss this, I feel is really very insensitive. One of the reasons we're really here has to do with Cuomo. He received a payout from Merck in jobs before this bill passed, just so you guys know. This is not just about vaccinations. There's a lot of other things that are going on here. And whether people want to, you know, dive into the rabbit hole and do some of their investigations or not is up to them personally. But there's many families in this district that have done that. And we know, because we know from personal experience, that there are issues here that are bigger than what the state has chosen to address. And those things we hope will come out in some of the lawsuits that have been filed. So one of the things that did, like I say, have an impact on the bill passing was in fact the fact that Cuomo got money from Merck to have additional jobs in Albany. Something else in your packet that you may want to look at has to do with the different ingredients that are in our vaccines, because not everybody knows this. And actually, if you go onto the website for the CDC now, it's actually changing. They're taking out the information that does show that there are fetal cells and there are animal parts and different things in here that you may not want to be injecting to your children. And it's some of the reasons why people, such as myself, choose to not vaccinate. Another thing to be aware of is the catch-up schedule. We were told by the 28th you had to have one of each of the series within the shots. There's actually some practices within the state that are saying this is a very aggressive schedule and it's very dangerous. Those of us that have gone down the rabbit hole and done our investigation know there has never been a thorough schedule of the CDC's recommended schedule of 72 doses of 16 vaccines. This is maybe something like what our older generation has seen, 5 doses on the left. And this is what they're asking our children to get now on the right. So to think that there's no health problems or issues that come from that would be sadly missed. So to say that maybe you haven't had the personal experience to have that happen to you is great, and I feel, you know, happy for families that don't have to deal with that. But that's not the case for all families.
Ms. Whaley, we thank you very, very much. You're limited to 3 minutes, and we appreciate the materials.
I'd be happy to go over that in depth, and I really would like to ask that we have an opportunity to meet further and see if there's anything in terms of resources that could be helped, in terms of maybe there's materials that could be used or given to our children, because there's nothing for us right now. We're being told, well, our hands are binded by what's going on with the state. Federally, there's IDA and there's ADA, and there's a responsibility for a free and public, appropriate public education. As a special educator, that I know that. So, you know, there's going to be something's going to have to come of that, because the state's telling us one thing, but the federal government says something else. So we would like an opportunity to see if there's anything, even in terms of homeschooling, that could be helped because I know homeschoolers receive services.
Okay.
So I would really like the opportunity to meet with the district to discuss that further.
Thank you so much. Thank you for the material.
My pleasure.
Keenan Hobby?
He was granted the exemption.
Is that on?
Exemption by the, is it on now? By the district 4 years, 5 years ago, and he's just completed third grade at Minnesaukee, and we were very grateful that he was granted that exemption, the religious exemption. And I just like to say that a lot of you swore to uphold the New York State Constitution, not least of which is every child can have an education. And I feel like you need to do something for these kids, no longer that they're being excluded from the school. Something needs to be done. You need to figure out a solution to help us get these kids through school. And if you're not doing that, I feel like you're denying that basic right. Complicit with the legislators in Albany. So you need to get together with the parents, come up with some kind of solution.
Thank you.
That's what I feel. Okay. And so I second what Dana said, is that I urge you to get together with us and discuss what we can do.
Thank you very much. Thank you. Saskia Padgett?
Hello. My name is Saskia Padgett. I've always been thankful to be a member of the Three Village community. My son attends Setauket School. I would like to thank you for your service on the school board as well. Eleven years ago, my husband and I made a decision that after careful research and consideration, we felt was in the best interest of our child. We had the freedom to choose what risk we were willing to take, the risk of vaccine injury or the risk of disease. And I would just like to point out that vaccination and immunization are not necessarily synonyms, as previously discussed. As you know, 4 weeks ago, that right to choose was taken away from us with the freedom of the public school education and all school education. I am concerned that my son will not have access to services as outlined in his IEP. I'm speaking today because I just wanted to put a face and a story to the issue, because you may not hear it in the news, you may not know it in your community. My son is a healthy child. We are conscientious parents. I keep him home when he is sick from school, which happened once in the past 5 years. Out of an abundance of caution, I canceled a play date when he was 7. After a report of pertussis was mentioned in the school district, and since the other boy had a baby sibling. I speak to you again today because you may not have had a face or a story to this issue, so that is why I'm sharing it, and I thank you for your time.
Thank you very much. Is there anyone else who would like to address the board at this time? Do I have a motion for adjournment? Mrs. Gish, second. Ms. Gimeno. Good evening, everyone, and thank you for coming.